This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
In the limelight.
Most findings in animals, including non-human primates, do not predict human results, and thus, far from being helpful, they are actually misleading, says Aisha Akhtar, researcher, in an article published under the heading, Animal Testing is Useless for Determining COVID Vaccine Effectiveness in Humans. Stay tuned for more of Aisha Akhtar's article. There have been concerted efforts on the part of primate researchers to convince the public and political leaders that more money and monkeys are needed for COVID-19 vaccine research. It's not surprising that monkey researchers would attempt to exploit people's fears about the pandemic to increase supplies and funding for their work. What is surprising, however, is a complete lack of differing scientific views offered. The problem with the assertions made by pro-monkey research groups is their lack of supporting evidence. Most findings in animals, including non-human primates, do not predict human results, and thus, far from being helpful, they're actually misleading. More than 700 human trials of potential HIV/AIDS vaccines have been conducted, all of which gave encouraging results in animals, including in monkeys and chimpanzees, yet not one has worked in humans. In fact, some HIV vaccines actually increase the risk of HIV in humans. And as models of human diseases, non-human primates have failed for Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, neuroscience brain research, stroke, cancer, hepatitis C, and many more. More than 90% of drugs that appear to be safe and effective in animals actually fail in human trials. Vaccine development has an even higher failure rate. Only 6% of vaccines make it to the market. Can you imagine if you boarded a plane and the pilot announced that you have a 6% chance of landing safely at your destination? You would demand an overhaul of the entire airline industry. Yet, when it comes to safety and effectiveness of the vaccines and drugs we put into our bodies, monkey researchers want you to believe that clinging to the tools of old, that is monkeys, is a good idea. We don't see anyone suggesting we should stick to the 8-track tape that we can stream music on our phones. There is a valid reason why we need diverse representation in human clinical trials. No one human can accurately represent how a vaccine or drug will work in another human. How can we expect another species to effectively predict biological responses in humans? Although COVID vaccines were tested in animals for regulatory reasons, tradition-based rather than science-based, there is devil in the detail. Biologically, very different processes are occurring with the COVID-19 virus. Mice proved difficult to infect with the virus, even when genetically modified to make them more susceptible. If they did show symptoms, they were mild. Different species of monkeys also failed to replicate human symptoms. And where symptoms did appear, they too tended to be mild, reflecting different infectious processes. Expert opinion agrees. The chief medical officer stated, "I don't think proving this in an animal model is on the critical path to getting this to be to a clinical trial." Operation Warp Speed's chief scientific advisor said, "Human data is 100 times more significant than non-human primate data." And Anthony Fauci stated that translating animal vaccine results to humans has been one of the banes of our existence. Biomedical research is increasingly utilizing innovative techniques that are human-specific. These techniques include human mini-organs or organoids and human organs on a chip, where three-dimensional cultures of human cells are housed on small chips with circulatory systems and other means of mimicking real-life function and physiology of actual human organs and the human body. These techniques are being used ever more widely in disease research and in drug discovery and development, and were used in pivotal stages of the COVID-19 vaccine development, alongside computational approaches to their design. Entire human immune systems can be cultured, as can lymph nodes, pivotal to immune function, specific to individual people to reflect interhuman variability, and reflective of both diseased and healthy states, or without the confounding issues of extrapolation between different species. For the sake of human health, our tax dollars should be directed into the best of science. Whichever way you look at it, future biomedical research, including vaccine development for pandemics like the COVID-19, will be based on human biology and human-specific testing methods. These methods are quicker, they're cheaper, they're more humane, and most importantly, they're relevant.
Inside Israel. The social crisis in Israel has become big, so big that it's now a national security threat. This is according to the annual strategic assessment of Israel, published by the National Security Research Institute at Tel Aviv University.
Well, we're coordinating with the leaders of the different cities, and we're making sure that we're in close contact. But of course, we know there is a lot of tension due to the recent cabinet decisions, and a lot of people, especially in the religious cities, such as, for example, Bnei Brak. As we saw yesterday, there were protests, and there are possibly protests that might take place also this evening. So that is something that we're definitely ready to deal with if necessary. But of course, the main aim will be to implement a full closure in all of the red zones, red cities.
The internal crisis in Israel now tops the third top post in the short list of national security threats facing Israel for the first time ever. In fact, it made the top list as the third most haunting issue for Israel, with Iran being on top place. This is the first time in Israel's history, apparently, that the social crisis there has been considered such a threat by the regime. It seems that things are only about to get worse there, too. According to the Institute, the internal crisis is represented by the instability of governance. The move to the fourth elections within 2 years would undermine the broad foundations of national security, the report added. The report also says that the crisis is a threat to Israel's national immunity. The report specifically cites the ongoing protests and the rise of violence and increase in bipartisan and divisions in Israeli politics that has reflected in society. The crisis, the report warns, will also lead to a weakening of regime agencies and institutions through difficulties in performance and obstruction of decision-making procedures. There is also a significant decrease in public confidence in institutions and the absence of solidarity and a common goal among the segments of Israeli society. The Institute believed that society is torn between health, economic, social, political, and governance crises simultaneously revealed during the corona epidemic. Keyword here, revealed. It turns out that these issues have always lingered in Israel, but were never addressed. The current crisis comes in light of the spread of the coronavirus as a result of the population's non-compliance with the instructions of the Ministry of Health and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It also comes after some officials failed to adhere to instructions such as total closure on the population. And when officials did finally adhere to the regime's rules, health officials said it was too late.
The decline in trust in institutions has two reasons. One is a long-range effect, and one is the short-term, which relates to the corona. The long-term is the attack on institutions, mainly by Netanyahu, over the last few years. The courts, the attorney general, the police, etc. The people who work, the civil servants who work at the Ministry of Finance. So the gatekeepers. I mean, if you attack these people and these attacks, look what happened in America with Trump attacking the media. Everybody is leftist. Everybody is subversive. So you can see the results in the decline of trust, and in the short term relates to the corona. The management of the corona crisis is pretty poor, and just look at so many people, both on the ultra-Orthodox communities and the Arab communities, who just defy the orders of the government. So all in all, the long term and the short term have a strong impact on the decline of trust in institutions. I think the statement by the INSS that the internal divisions and feuds are a national security and actually a national crisis is correct. We can deal with any external threat, and we've shown over the decades that whenever we are attacked, we get together and we prevail. If we are divided like this and we lose trust in the institutions, and we are getting into the fourth elections in 2 years, no wonder people lose trust. And when they lose trust, this is very dangerous. So I agree, this is a great, great danger to Israel, the internal crisis, the internal feud. First of all, there's the old division between secular Jews or non-Orthodox Jews and Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel. This has a long history of there's a community that pay less taxes. They don't study the core issues like math and English, etc., which are necessary to modern world. Many of the men don't work, and they don't serve in the army like all of us. I served, my children served, and my granddaughter now is in the army. So to look at a community that doesn't take part in the national effort is very infuriating. Come the corona, and you see these people defying the orders of the Ministry of Health, and they are getting infected. I think the Israelis would have accepted anything if they had leadership who would tell them, you know what, everybody has now to pay something. People who can, people who make a lot of money should have paid, should have been taxed to help others survive this. But you need leadership for this.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. On Twitter, Shimon says, an economic and social crisis in Israel. No services for welfare for 2 weeks. Leo says, Israel starting war to cover the economic and social crisis in Israel. Thousands of Israelis renewed weekly demonstrations against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, calling for the long-serving Prime Minister to resign over corruption charges against him and his alleged mishandling of the coronavirus crisis.
Israeli public, it has no belief in its officials, in its government, in all the government offices. There's no belief in them, in non-belief. The police is in force is using extra power on children, on elderly, on just people that are in the streets, on one hand, and on the other hand, other people do whatever they want. Nobody believes anybody anymore. So people don't trust anybody. They don't trust the opposition. They don't trust the government. And the thing is, why the people went down to the streets is because the disbelief. And what a lot of people, not all of them, but a lot of people are saying, we do not want to go back to, it's in Hebrew, it's called the old state of Israel. We do not want to go there because it wasn't good for a lot of us. It wasn't good for the Palestinians. It wasn't good for the Mizrahim, it wasn't good for the Ethiopians, it wasn't good for a lot of people, basically. It wasn't good for the poor. So basically, I think people are saying, we want something that is completely new. We don't trust any of the politicians that are changing parties from, you know, they've been in this party, and now they want to go in this party, and now they're separating and they're combining. Most of the public does not believe the public figures in Israel almost anymore. There's no trust.
The effects of the political and economic crises and the strength of their negative effects largely stem from the way they were managed. Israelis blame the regime for the mismanagement of the coronavirus crisis. Opinion polls have recently showed the existence of a loss of confidence in the regime, Israel's leaders, and institutions. This loss of confidence has negatively affected the Israeli population's readiness to implement anything the regime tells it. Businesses, including restaurants, have failed to adhere lockdown procedures. members. The poll also shows that most Israelis support the continuation of the demonstrations and protests. This even in the backdrop of their deteriorating economic and social conditions. This is, of course, a huge threat to the Israeli regime. The demands of the protesters have begun with the downfall of Netanyahu, but these protesters have went on to ask for the dissolution of the cabinet and Knesset and a fourth election. In December, their demands are met. Now, with a fourth election set for March, the weekly anti-regime protests still continue with more people joining. A recent survey by the Israel Democracy Institute showed that 83% of Israelis believe that there is no social solidarity there. According to this poll, 74% of Israelis say that they do not trust parliament, that is the Knesset, and cannot rely on it in the face of the pandemic. 70% do not trust the cabinet, 63% of them do not trust finance ministry officials, 51% of them do not trust the police, and 47% do not trust the Ministry of Health.
A statesman is not a politician. A statesman thinks about the future of the country and what's good for the country. The politician thinks about the next election and what's good for him. And what we see today, we have politicians. We don't have the statesmen. We don't have the people who give us a vision. Just think about the Israelis today, they don't have hope. There's nobody they believe in who can speak to them and tell them the truth. If it's hard, Israelis know to go through hardships, but they need leaders, statesmen, to believe in. And we don't have these people right now. So let's see what happens in the next elections. I look at the protest. The hundreds of thousands of Israel taken to the streets, and there are some people who are doing it for week after week, you know, in the cold weather, rain or shine. And I know many of the young people who go to the process, and I see a lot of potential there. So I'm a sworn optimist, so I believe that we will see a new generation of people emerging out of this crisis and taking over. I think Israelis want a direction. Israelis are willing to go through a lot of hardships, but show us where we are going. If you look at the handling of the current corona crisis. The businesses are closing down. People are laid off. I don't know if they when the corona goes away, they will find any job anymore. And in the meantime, our leaders throwing money like from the helicopter on everybody, people who need it, people who don't need it, with no any plan of how we make a crisis into an opportunity. For example, strengthen the public health system. The reason why we survived this crisis is because we have Kupot Cholim, we have public health organization, which are so strong and so accessible to the public. Look at the vaccination, how well it goes, because we have all those organizations which have been shrinking over the years because of lack of funds. And suddenly we have so much money to throw on everybody instead of investing in the public health system.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Sir Distick on Twitter says the commission found reasonable grounds to believe that individual members of the Israeli security forces, in the course of their response to the demonstrations, killed and injured civilians who were neither directly participating in hostilities nor posing an imminent threat. Yehi asks, what about the demonstrations against Bibi, the ones going on for months all through this pandemic? Jankowski says, thousands of Israelis renewed their weekly demonstrations in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, asking him to step down as Tel Aviv went into third COVID-19 lockdown. Since last year, Israel has been witnessing demonstrations everywhere.
It's a mistake to think that the public was out in the streets only to demand that the government will be dispersed. And it was a mistake, and there's also a mistake, a lot of people think that the demand is to interrogate all kinds of things, like the selling of the submarines or the buying of the submarines also to Egypt or to whoever. I'm not too involved in that issue. I think a lot of the public, some of the public is out there saying we want a government that is not corrupt. But a lot of people are out in the streets, or a lot of people are not out in the streets, but basically they feel that they do not want to go back to business as usual. They do not want any government. And also there's something I didn't mention, because on the last elections, one of the Kahol Levan party received a lot of voices. They received a lot of people voted for them, and the hope was that they would send Netanyahu to trial or to, you know, or home, basically. And they sold the public. They went into coalition with the Netanyahu government. So people don't trust anybody. They don't trust the opposition. They trust the government. People feel that the vaccinations, a lot of people are happy to take them, but a lot of people feel that the vaccinations, the fact that Israel has been receiving so many vaccinations, people feel that Israel is like the government is allowing people to be, the companies to do experiments on people here in Israel. So basically, the sense of disbelief is tremendous all over. And actually, when you look at what's happening around in Israel, you see the Palestinians for 48, talking Umm al-Fahim and cities within Israel. It's an uprise now. They're in the streets, there's police, children of 14 years old are being arrested violently. You have these collisions with the Bnei Brak, with the Orthodox cities. You have it almost everywhere. Israel is extremely in unrest all around. There's nothing, you know, we've been out in the streets for 30 weeks now in Balfour in Jerusalem, but not only there. So basically, there's a big the society is in a situation of unrest. And also people feel that the fact that they're going to elections in the fourth time in 2 years, it's the feeling that there's no government. There's no head of police, there's all kinds of positions that are not occupied because the government, Netanyahu, is not, the government isn't functioning.
Israel has lost control of coronavirus for several reasons, the annual strategic assessment of Israel said. the most important of which is the loss of internal political stability and the failure of the Israelis to respond to the instructions of their regime. To this day, much of the Israeli public believes the coronavirus is a natural disaster, mainly due to their distrust of the regime. But it is important to know that these issues only shed light on underlying crises that have been ignored. Now, the social problem is a national and strategic security threat for Israel, one that has shaken the highest echelons of the regime.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Nowruz Special. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. People in Iran and other countries in which Nowruz is celebrated eagerly wait for the coming of the new year. The moment of the turn of the year is a very happy moment, and the first days of the new year are also full of joy and excitement as people pay visits to each other. But this year, like the previous one, is different as the entire world is gripped with coronavirus outbreak and people should observe health instructions to remain immune. The new conditions caused by coronavirus disease have made it difficult for visiting each other, yet we have to accept realities and make every effort to change the conditions while praying to God to help us to overcome the uninvited virus. It is true that COVID-19 has distanced us from one another, but we can plan differently for our holidays. Although we are far from each other, we can keep Nowruz traditions in a different way. For instance, we can send lovely and congratulatory messages to our relatives and friends to show our sincerity. We can share pictures and messages via social media and internet. This way, everyone can participate in joyous moments while being away from hazards of coronavirus. The coronavirus outbreak has imposed new conditions which we have to adapt ourselves with. In view of this, we should distract our attention from the things that are unable to do. We have to be sympathetic with each other and pay attention to the needy more than before. Moreover, the new lockdown circumstances can help us appreciate those days and times when we could gather together and enjoy ourselves. In the current year conditions, it is good to be heedful of our loved ones and send them presents. We can spend more time with our children and younger ones. We can sit together and share our happy experiences. It can be through sharing photos, voices, and videos. Coronavirus has forced us to avoid shaking hands, hugging, and kissing each other. We have to cope with the new conditions. In view of this, we can plan for family games. We can also watch TV together. As a matter of fact, many Iranian families watch TV programs together. According to the Islamic narrations, people do not know the value of a bounty unless they lose it. The friendly and family gatherings were great bounties for all of us. Now that we have lost them due to the coronavirus pandemic, we are in nostalgia of the previous years and days, but we should never lose hope. Thus, everyone should observe health protocols and refrain from unnecessary trips. The New Year holidays are the best chance for traveling, but we should take care to decide logically. Every unnecessary trip is a means of a spread of coronavirus. As the health experts have said time and again, we have to stay home and not leave home except for vital reasons. A brief look at the society shows that many jobs can be done without the need to go from one place to another. After the outbreak of coronavirus, a considerable number of employees have stayed home doing their jobs through the internet with no need to go to the workplace. This proves that many activities can be carried out virtually. There is no other choice except cooperation and unity to overcome the coronavirus.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 22, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the chairman and members of the Assembly of Experts. The meeting was held at the end of the eighth session of the Assembly.
For example, the Islamic government is faced with conditional pressures imposed by the enemy. So, when such an issue arises, the concept of therefore stand firm in the straight path as you are commanded, you and those who with you turn unto Allah, becomes completely clear to us. Before the emergence of such issues, it is not completely clear to us. The phrase, and those who with you turn unto Allah, meaning that the people should stand firm, is a general rule. But when such a situation arises, we understand its meaning specifically and exactly. Today, we are faced with such an issue. Our people have certain problems, part of which results from the pressures exerted by the enemy. Therefore, we want the people to stand firm in the face of these problems. This is a great and important movement that is thankfully being launched in our country.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
تا مادامی که جبهه مرکب دشمن جبهه شیطان که مرکب از شیاطین مختلفه در مقابل انسان قرار نگرفته و انسان از همه طرف محاصره نشده معنای این آیه رو درست نمیفهمه که ولما را المؤمنون الاحزاب قالوا هذا ما وعدنا الله ورسوله وصدق الله ورسوله وما زادهم الا ایمانا وتسلیما.
Another example is that as long as the enemy's miscellaneous front, the camp of the shaitan composed of various devils, does not confront us, and as long as we are not besieged from all sides, we do not correctly understand the meaning of this ayah. When the believers saw the confederate forces, they said, "This is what Allah and His Messenger had promised us, and Allah and His Messenger told us what was true." And it only added to their faith and their zeal in obedience. Chapter 33, verse 22. It means that when we face a difficult circumstance, we should not become agitated and we should not make others agitated. This is what Allah and His Messenger had promised us.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Twenty-one state attorneys general are suing Biden administration, saying that the president exceeded his authority in halting production of the Keystone XL pipeline by executive order earlier this year. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Chris Walker Ryder. This article is published under the heading, 21 States Sue Biden in Attempt to Revive Keystone Pipeline. Here's more on that. State attorneys general are suing the Biden administration, alleging that the president exceeded his authority in halting production of the Keystone XL pipeline by executive order earlier this year. The lawsuit, led by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Montana Attorney General Austin Kinson, was filed recently at a federal district court in Texas. The suit argues that Biden does not have the authority to halt the pipeline project through executive order, and that only legislation passed by Congress can create such a decree. Revocation of the Keystone XL pipeline permit is a regulation of interstate and international commerce, which can only be accomplished as any other statute can, through the process of bicameralism and presentment, the lawsuit states. The president lacks the power to enact his ambitious plan to reshape the economy in defiance of Congress' unwillingness to do so. The lawsuit further alleges that the states involved in it stand to lose substantial tax benefits that would have helped poorer rural areas. The pipeline has been halted before, when the Obama administration issued a similar executive order stopping its production. Former President Donald Trump revived the pipeline's construction in 2019. Biden's executive order ending it once again came about the same day that he was sworn in office earlier this year. Biden claimed authority to end the pipeline by citing a presidential permit that had been signed by his predecessor. The permit is hereby revoked in accordance with Article 1 of the permit, the executive order read. Ending the pipeline was important to address the long-term effects of climate change and to begin the process of transitioning toward a clean energy economy, Biden order said. Leaving the Keystone XL pipeline permit in place would not be consistent with my administration's economic and climate imperatives, he said. While several states are arguing in favor of resuming the pipeline, indigenous water protectors in states like Minnesota want to see more pipeline projects ended as well, such as the Enbridge Line 3 replacement and expansion plan. Earlier this week, Enbridge officials announced a temporary halt to the Line 3 project due to seasonal restrictions. Work is slated to begin again around June 1st. Indigenous activists and community leaders are demanding that Governor Tim Walz, Minnesota Democratic former Labor Party, issue an executive order ending the pipeline, as the court considers litigation regarding its continued construction. Enbridge is now furiously constructing the pipeline, literally at five separate locations, in an effort to construct as much of the pipeline as possible before the appellate court considers the substantive issues of the appeal, Robert Larson, chairman of the Minnesota Indiana First Council, wrote in a letter to Waltz last month. The attorneys general say Congress should have the final say on the project. Attorneys general from 21 states sued to overturn President Joe Biden's cancellation of the contentious Keystone XL oil pipeline from Canada. Led by Ken Paxton of Texas and Austin Kenston of Montana, the state said Biden had overstepped his authority when he revoked the permit for the Keystone pipeline on his first day in office. Because the line would run through multiple U.S. states, Congress should have the final say over whether it's built, according to the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Texas. Construction on the 1,200-mile, that is about 1,930-kilometer pipeline, began last year when former President Donald Trump revived the long-delayed project after it had stalled under Obama administration. It would move up to 830,000 barrels, that is about 35 million gallons of crude daily from the oil and fields of Western Canada to Steele City, Nebraska, where it would connect to other pipelines that feed oil refineries on the U.S. Gulf Coast. Biden canceled its permit over long-standing concerns that burning oil sands crude would make climate change worse. Some moderate Democratic lawmakers also have urged Biden to reverse his decision, including senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and John Tester of Montana. Other states joining in on the lawsuit includes attorneys general from Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming.
Around the world with reporters.
As the UK races ahead with its vaccine rollout, discussions have turned to normalising large public gatherings such as sports events, cinemas and theatre shows. Britain's Culture Secretary, Oliver Dowden, has revealed that the government are now considering COVID passports to allow people to attend large-scale public events from June the 21st.
We'll be testing whether we can use COVID certification to help facilitate the return of sports. Obviously, final decisions have not been taken on that, and I'm working with the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Michael Gove, who is leading on our COVID certification work programme. But I think that is a potential tool that could help the return of the things that we love.
Campaigners have been quick to push back against such proposals, adamant such a move would restrict people's right to refuse any form of vaccination. More than 300,000 people have signed a petition against COVID passports, citing MP Nadeem Zahawi, the secretary in charge of the vaccine rollout, who said there were no plans for vaccine passports back in December 2020. Last week's unease over potential blood clots being linked to the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine added more anxiety. In Brussels, the EU have announced similar proposals to facilitate freedom of movement within the bloc. Their digital green certificate would allow their 450 million residents to travel freely between nation states, one of the essential four freedoms that make up the European Union. This has become critical as a third wave of infections continues to spread. The digital green certificates will apply to tourists also, British holidaymakers who've been quick to book their European getaways are finding themselves having to get vaccines and COVID passports before travelling. Turkey, however, have come out and declared they will not be imposing such criteria, a marketing ploy designed to attract vaccine-weary holidaymakers. Concerns over vaccines and human rights will remain ongoing. Anti-vax campaigners will continue their crusade, but those in the entertainment industry, as well as countries reliant on tourism, will be desperate to get their economies back up and running. In this vein, many feel vaccine passports will ultimately become part of the new normal.
This part of the world has been on the limelight since the last few decades for its impressive growth and development. But the benefits of development are not reaching to its impoverished section. India, the world's second most populous nation and a diverse country, is still struggling to feed millions as hunger continues to be a challenging task for successive governments. For those having tough times to feed themselves, growth and development is just for a TV and a newspaper, since their lives have not changed.
This pandemic has created a humanitarian crisis in India. We saw that with the lockdown, millions of people started walking. Now, all of those people, they suddenly went from earning, 10,000, 15,000 to earning zero and having no savings to fall back on.
Based on the State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World 2020 report, there are some 189 million undernourished people in India, which accounts to about 14% of country's overall population, which includes women and children, putting the future generation of the country at huge stake. Experts say government programs and schemes need a vigorous implementation.
It's also a challenge of not having enough coverage within the food security law. So like in a place like Delhi, only 37% of the population has access to rations under that food security law, whereas more than 50% of Delhi lives in slum or slum-like conditions.
India's aim to achieve the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals by 2030 includes providing nutrition to all, and ending hunger looks like a challenging task for the country, keeping in view the geography and the population. On the other hand, experts say addressing the stark food inequality and robust distribution system is the most vital way forward. Many reports, surveys, and studies suggest that India has the largest number of undernourished people in the world. However, the government has time and again junked these reports, questioning the methodology of their calculating the hunger index, saying India has made progress in feeding the most deprived over the last decade. Experts, however, say the country needs to strengthen its delivery system and programs to achieve a lasting solution. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
The first summit between China and the United States since the election of Joe Biden produced an unexpected and extraordinary diplomatic blow-up. During opening remarks, top U.S. diplomats tried to present China as a global threat, airing a litany of complaints about the way China's government and political culture differs from the West. That breach of diplomatic norms led to an hour of public arguing, which saw China's top diplomat, Yang Jiechi, point out that the U.S. was, quote, massacring the people of other countries and, quote, toppling regimes through the use of force. Yang called the U.S. the champion of cyber attacks, noted that blacks in the U.S. are slaughtered, and asked the U.S. to, quote, stop advancing its own democracy in the rest of the world, a democracy which Yang said many Americans no longer have confidence in. The summit may come to be viewed as the beginning of a new geopolitical era defined by Chinese confidence.
A lot of the, ruling class in the U.S. is very used to thinking of China as like this poor, dominated country that in recent decades has just been a source of cheap labor. And they're really frightened that this country that should have been, dominated and defeated is, standing up as a world power.
Just prior to the summit, Biden placed sanctions on 24 Chinese officials, which may have been designed to end any chances for cooperation even before the meeting began.
The Obama administration